This weekend was brilliant, and it was brilliant for two reasons. A, all the games were competitive until the very end. Obviously, the Patriot-Charger game wasn't great.
Right.
And we touched on this a little bit earlier, but the best thing that also happened is there is no top story that questions the integrity of the sport.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems to happen a lot in the NFL these days, where the thing that the national audience is talking about is some kind of bad call that calls into question the integrity of the game. It doesn't mean everything was flawless. Were there a couple of calls throughout these weekends of games where you could say, hey, that was a personal foul, or that was this or that was that? Sure, it's never going to be perfect. But you walked away talking about the actual football. You walked away saying, that was great, that was entertaining, debating the legacies of Josh Allen and Justin Herbert and how good are the Patriots and coaching. But you aren't talking about the officials. And that's a victory, and I think that, to me, is almost the pseudo-headline of how great Wild Card Weekend was.
Right.
It's actually about football.
But I also think it still feels also kind of wide open. It's hard to say, like, this team is going to be the – it used to be Kansas City Chiefs, they're winning the Super Bowl.
Right.
And if they don't, at least they're getting there. I can't say that about any of these games.
I agree.
I have zero idea.
We clinched officially two new teams in the Super Bowl yesterday.
Yes, exactly.
And how often,
which is awesome.
And how often do we, A, get that, or B, officially get that after Wild Card Weekend? Usually there's at least one team, Kansas City, who takes it all the way to the championship game. We are sitting here on January 12th with an entire divisional round and championship weekend in which we know for sure we're getting a new Super Bowl. And I agree with you, Tiki, and I remember bringing this up back in October to you, or November. This is the most wide open the NFL has felt maybe in two decades. And that's not an overstatement, because we just had two dynasties, the Kansas City Chief dynasty and the New England Patriot dynasty. And as long as they were around, even if they didn't get there, even if they didn't win, things felt like it wasn't wide open. But now, of course it's wide open.
And if it's that wide open, who's to say the Jets next year aren't the Commanders last year with Dante Moore?
All right, calm yourself down. Now you took it a little too far.
But I mean, honestly, though, he's joking with you to troll you a little bit, but... If you are one of those teams that's been struggling, why not believe that?
No, this is the year that should point you to that.
The Bears stunk a year ago.
The Patriots sucked last year.
Exactly.
I know why you're saying it. I'm just going to feed right into what you want me to say. If anything, it's a reminder that the Giants can be here next year. Like, if you're a Giant fan.
Yeah, because you have the quarterback, you have some good
and
pieces,
the new coach, which there are so many examples of. Ben Johnson in Chicago, Mike Vrabel in New England, where, hey, just get the right coach in and everything can turn immediately. And I think the Bears and specifically the Patriots are such a great example of that. So if that's what you wanted me to say, Sean, you got it. If you're a Giant fan, you should watch this and say, this can be us.
Not to mention Mike McDonald's only in his second year.
You're right.
Yeah.
As a Jet fan, I watch this, and you know what I say? We're a million miles away.
Okay.
Thanks for that.
Again, you could say I was trolling Jets.
I can see why he feels that way. What's here that you're building on?
I'm just saying, you have the second overall pick. What if you pick? Look at all these young quarterbacks that are winning games.
But they're still going to be a rookie.
That's why I specifically brought up Jaden Daniels last year.
Okay.
Because that started this.
Yes, but Caleb Williams, second year.
Yeah.
Drake May,
all right, so you know what?
Second year.
You're 2 years away. After you fire Glenn and the rookie establishes themselves.
We're going to be fair to you, Evan.
Yeah.
2027.
That's what I'm saying.
You'll get Clint Kubiak in 2 years.
Yes.
And then you're off and running.
That's much more reasonable. They're going to draft a quarterback. It's going to be a disaster this year. Glenn is gone. They'll hire a new coach. And in 2027, we are primed to turn things around. I do want to commend, before we get to your phone calls, the winner of Twitter and information from the weekend that was in football. And if I gave you 100 guesses, you wouldn't get it.
No.
And this is a football-related tweet that I think was the most interesting thing I learned over the weekend. And the person I want to give love to is John Heyman.
Huh.
John Heyman. Are you aware of the Shaq Thompson fact?
No.
So Shaq Thompson, obviously linebacker of the Buffalo Bills, had an interception early in the game.
Yes.
And before that, spent many years with the Carolina Panthers. He is a 8 or 9 year NFL veteran. Shaq Thompson played baseball. And back in 2012, was an 18th round draft pick by the Boston Red Sox.
Okay.
That's all interesting enough. But I gotta take it to another level. He played 1 year of minor league baseball. Okay? 1 year. Shaq was a center fielder. Good athlete, played center field. He played 1 year of minor league baseball as an 18-year-old in the Red Sox organization and had 39 at-bats. He has singly the most impressive major league or minor league baseball stat line I have ever seen. I have never seen anything like this. Are you ready? Let's hear it. Shaq Thompson in 39 at-bats went 0 for 39 with 37 strikeouts.
I guess there's a reason he didn't stick with baseball.
Dude.
Sounds like Giancarlo off a rehab stint.
Tim Tebow did better than that. Michael Jordan did better than that.
I mean, clearly he was also playing football.
I don't care if you're also a ballerina dancer.
Yeah, but think
for 39 with 37 strikeouts.
But think about how physically jacked up you are if you're a football player.
Bro.
And how tight your muscles are. Like, there's no way you have a fluid baseball swing. What did he play, catcher?
No, he was a center fielder.
Center fielder, so he's athlete.
Dude, 0 for 39 with 37 strikeouts?
It's almost impossible.
That's my point. It's the most impressive stat line I've ever seen. So now, as the Buffalo Bills go on their playoff run, whenever I see Shaq Thompson, I'm going to think to myself, I'm a better hitter than him. Because I almost think if I had 39 at-bats in the Gulf Coast League, I think I'd be able to make contact more than twice.
Not anymore.
Am I correct? Well, not anymore. I got a bad back. I could barely walk.
You're telling me like a 22-year-old Evan Roberts, I think, has a better minor league career. Yeah.
I think you'd have a better minor league career.
My bat speed slowed down in high school, but you're probably right.
Now, that's not to say that Shaq Thompson didn't play a mean center field. I mean, maybe he made diving catches.
Maybe Stearns would have loved his run prevention.
Maybe.
I needed to find an image of him.
As a baseball player?
What do you look like as a baseball player?
I have just ruined the image of Buffalo Bills football for a lot of people for the next few weeks. Like, anytime Shaq Thompson is mentioned, now you're going to think about 0 for 39 with 37 strikeouts.
Oh, if he drops an interception next week, just go swing a bat again.
I just can't believe how bad this is. Because John Heyman tweeted it like, hey, Shaq Thompson, you know, he played minor league baseball and was really bad. So, of course, what I did is I went on Baseball Reference.
Of course, you had to look.
0 for 39 with 37 strikeouts. He did walk 8 times. So, in fairness, there were 8 different examples in which he was able to get on base. Let's go to Matt in Bayshore. What's up, Matt?
Hey, guys. Great show, as always. Happy to be able to follow you guys to midday.
Appreciate it.
Couple things. I do appreciate the little troll of the Buffalo Bills there with your baseball statistics about a guy who had an interception from the defense yesterday. But I am a very relieved Buffalo Bills fan. The defense did bail them out yesterday a little at the end of the game there. And having said that, Josh Allen cannot have a mistake-filled game like he did yesterday. If you can indulge me on a separate point, I tried to get a hold of you guys last week. I have an idea kicking around my head about how to combat tanking in the NFL.
Okay, let's
see. And I think it kind of translates across all the major sports, honestly. And I will acknowledge that this is a far cry from happening because it would require a commissioner who would do something unprecedented. My idea is this. What if you took, say, the bottom 3 teams of the league and instill some sort of financial relegation? In other words, a radically diminished percentage of the shared money. I think that would go a long way at hitting these owners in the pockets. It might even compel certain owners in baseball to reinvest into their teams on the field if there is a financial incentive to do so.
The reason I don't like it is because I don't want fans fighting amongst themselves about the priorities of ownership. Is it money or a better draft pick? Like, I think what you have to do is just no longer stick having the worst record with having the number one pick. You have to change that, because as long as that remains the same, many fans, and I totally get why, at the end of seasons, are going to say we're better off losing so we can get the better pick.
Right. It has to get into a fan mind that losing or winning at the end of the game doesn't matter to something that's happening 5 months from that moment.
Yeah.
And I think the stability of the NFL and what we were just talking about, let's call it the parity of the NFL, is because any team feels like they're on equal playing level with any other team. And so how you manage that is up to you. You can get creative, like Howie Roseman, who gets a ton of credit for the creative cap management that he does, re-sign his players and bring in free agents. Like, that's individual to a team. But I think as a whole, all 32 teams feel like in any given year, we can find a way to compete.
Yeah.
That's not necessarily the case in Major League Baseball.
Couple of thoughts on Buffalo. I feel more committed today than I did 3 days ago that this is the Bills' year and they're going to the Super Bowl despite a lot of the challenges they're going to facing. And the latest is Gabe Davis being out.
Right.
And Josh Allen is kind of losing his targets, if you will. But one thing that's going to have to change next week in Denver is this Jacksonville game was the irremovable force versus the irresistible object. James Cook had an unbelievable year running the football this year versus the number one run defense. And he got shut down.
Yep.
I mean, the Jaguars did a great job. They're going from playing the number one run defense to the number two run defense.
Right.
So I don't know how much you're getting out of Cook
right. and
next team weekend
the,
in Denver.
And the team with the most sacks in the NFL.
Yeah. I mean, you're facing another elite level defense.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of this is just the vibe thing. This is his year. Like, he's conquered the demons, and at least he did it in the regular season, which I know he's done before, and not having to face Patrick Mahomes and Joe Burrow in the postseason. But having to do it on the road, which is now official, like, they will not host a home playoff game. That was possible if the Chargers went on a run.
Good, close that dump.
It just feels like this is the kind of year that they go on the run and get to a Super Bowl. And I stand by it. I feel more convicted about it today than I did 3 days ago.
I mean, I guess so. But, again, it still feels so wide open to me. It's so hard for them, their path. They're going to have to go through it.
Dude, it's wide open. I mean, I think the point spread for this game against Denver is basically a pick 'em.
Yeah.
I think maybe they're actually laying a point and a half.
They are. They're favored.
But either way, I mean, Vegas is showing you what you're saying, and I still agree it's wide open. I just think if I had to pick the team that's coming out of the AFC, and I don't say it with a smile on my face as a bitter Jet fan, I think it's them. But unfortunately, Jet fans, we're in a really tough spot because think about who's remaining. We got two teams from our division and Aaron Rodgers.
So I didn't even think of the Jet person because when you got done talking about it being so wide open 15 minutes ago, I looked down. I was like, man, as a Giant fan, I don't care who wins at all.
Yeah.
Now the Eagles are out.
Yeah, right. You're in a great spot because your division's been wiped out completely. I've got two teams from my division and Aaron Rodgers, which is why, you know, the Texans going to the Super Bowl would make me very happy.
True, because you don't care.
Yeah, I'd be like, whatever.
You know what? F the Texans. Hope they lose big time tonight.
Because I see what because you want me and Jet fans to be in pain.
Is that what you think?
Yes.
How selfish of you, Evan.
Bro, if the Steelers win today, I want you to keep this in mind. If the Steelers win today, 75% of the remaining AFC teams cause pain to Jet fans.
Okay. How about this one to throw back at you? You know what the Texan run does? It just gives juice to all the Astro fans that have already laughed in all the Yankee fans' faces.
I don't care.
All the Astro fans are Texan fans. The Houston thing. I don't want the Astro fans happy. They're Texan fans.
Oh, you mean not relative to the Giants?
No, but now relative to the Yankees?
Yeah.
F the Texans.
I mean, come on. That's really the stretch you're making.
That can't be the reason you're
anti-Texas.
They've
already won their championships in baseball. They don't deserve a football one.
Tiki, I'll explain.
The Yankees have won their championships, and the Giants have theirs.
They're very dusty now, Tiki.
What Sean is doing is he hates the Jets, and he knows that Aaron Rodgers having success causes anger to Jet fans, and he knows that either the Patriots, the Bills, or the Steelers being in the Super Bowl.
I thought you were over
it. I'm over it, but I don't want to see him go to a Super Bowl. Hmm. I mean, those things can all be
true,
right?
He's already gone to one before.
Yeah, but it's in the post-Jet world. I don't want him going to a Super Bowl in the post-Jet world.
You know what?
Sam Darnold bothers me less than Aaron Rodgers going to a Super Bowl.
How long ago was Brett Favre here?
2008.
So 17 years ago?
Yeah.
15 years from now, Jet fans aren't going to remember Aaron Rodgers was a Jet.
No, you're dead wrong about that.
Just trust me.
I would trust you.
They're not going to remember.
You don't think we're going to remember him jogging out there with the American flag and tearing his Achilles 3 years into his career?
Not gonna
three
remember.
Plays into his career?
Not going to remember.
You're very wrong.
And if he doesn't, that means you've hired terrible coaches over the next 15 years.
Well, okay, that's a nice little variation. If the Jets went on and had great success, it will probably make it a little bit easier. But I don't think anything will delete that part of Jets history. It's going to last forever. Nico's in Brooklyn. Hey, Nico.
Hey, guys. Good afternoon. Hope all is well.
What's up, man?
I'm pretty good, man. Just a quick question to the both of you, because I really want to hear what your thoughts and opinion are on it. It's regarding Justin Herbert and whether or not would you consider him a smidge overrated or are the Chargers kind of wasting his prime by not putting, like, a good supporting cast around him. And the reason why I'm saying this, on TV, the dude doesn't look like he has a big frame. Yeah. And the amount of hits he's taking, I don't know, like, how he's going to, you know, be able to bounce back up after so many hits like that.
Yeah, look, he is a bigger kid. I know he looks small on TV, but he's a big kid. And you do worry a little bit about the hits that he's taken, but not nearly like you did the narrative around Jackson Dart, because he's not reckless with when he does run the football. The thing I'd worry about with Justin Herbert is, who's the great player that's playing with him? I mean, seriously, who is the Hall of Famer that's playing with Justin Herbert on offense? And you're going to be hard pressed to find one.
Yeah, the shell of Keenan Allen.
Keenan Allen, but he's 34?
No, that's not the shell of him.
He's also not playing at that level anymore. He's in his mid 30s.
Right, and he started the season fantastic. But he's 34, so guess what happens? Attrition, it starts to affect you a little bit better.
I think that, and you tell me, because you watched the tape, this is my impression on Sunday night's game with Justin Herbert. And I am in no business of making excuses for him because Justin Herbert has come up small in every big opportunity he's been given, including last night. Last night specifically felt like a no-chance game. It felt like his offensive line was abysmal. Yeah. It felt like his receivers were never open. And it felt like, not that I'm exonerating him, but a lot of last night was on everyone else too.
Right.
He was in a no-chance situation. And maybe that's a credit to New England and a credit to what they were dialing up against him.
They had a better plan.
But it felt like he had no shot last
night. Evan, I showed it to you. It's just I looked at what Justin Herbert was looking at. I'm like, why did he not get rid of this ball? Because that's what Sean said when he first came in, and we talked about this game last night, was, man, it felt like none of his wide receivers are open. It felt like there was nowhere, especially in the second half, after the halftime adjustments. It felt like there was nowhere for Justin Herbert to go with the football. That's because the Patriots' defense was so confusing. It looked like one thing, and as soon as the ball snapped, it's something like diametrically different.
Right.
When you have a cover four shell look, and then at the snap of the ball, it's cover zero. It's like, what do I do? And they have good man coverage players. The Patriots do. Christian Gonzalez is one of the best.
Who is in concussion protocol.
Right. And so all of those players played at a heightened level, and they knew they had a X's and O advantage over the Chargers, and it showed. And so, in that case, you need someone who can win. You need a Jamar Chase or a Justin. You need someone who is just, I'm throwing you the ball even though you're covered, and I know you're going to go get it.
Right.
Justin Herbert doesn't have that.
Now, with all that said, Justin Herbert in the big spot is atrocious. So I ain't exonerating him. He's got a lot to prove, and I think the pressure's only going to build year after year after year, especially when you have regular season success, and then you show up in the postseason, and it's a disaster.
Has he won a playoff
game? No, he's 0-3. Now, all three games have been on the road.
But it doesn't matter.
But one of those games, he had a 27-0 lead, right?
He did enough offensively versus Jacksonville. Well, I shouldn't say that. I learned my lesson with Russell Wilson in Dallas. He did enough in theory. The defense blew it, and then he couldn't make a play late in that
game. Right. But ultimately, that's Andy Dalton.
Yeah.
Andy Dalton was a really good regular season quarterback.
Great comp.
Got to the postseason and could never win.
And that is going to continue to build and build. Mm-hmm. All things aren't created equal. Like, Josh Allen hasn't won the big one. But in fairness to Josh Allen, I've never walked away from any of his postseason losses and said, boy, that's really on him.
Yeah, that's his fault.
It didn't feel that
way. And he's also an MVP. And he's been close in a couple of the years besides the one that he won.
Lamar Jackson was more in the middle. Like, there were some postseason games in which you walk away and say, hey, that wasn't the Lamar Jackson MVP player. In the case of Justin Herbert, he just hasn't. He hasn't given it to you. It's been three playoff games, and they've been all disasters.
Now, this guy ended up with two playoff wins, I believe, but I feel like it's a lot of Romo Cowboys in the Chargers. These great regular seasons, electrifying plays from the quarterback.
I feel like Romo's failures were, like, epic, though. It wasn't just kind of...
like, just no ho-hum, like they always just were, like, the pressure was on and it was a mistake.
But you know what else the Chargers need to do? And it's much easier said than done, because this was their opportunity. They got to win a division. Because when you win a division, at least you get a home playoff game.
Yeah, but that doesn't... I mean...
he hasn't had one yet.
I know, but that doesn't matter in Los Angeles for them.
Well, yeah, he'll never play a home
honestly,
playoff game.
Honestly, they won't.
You're
they
right.
Don't have a fan. They don't. When I say that, I'm not saying it flippantly. They don't have a fan base.
I agree. It's not the same as the Packers having a home playoff game, or even the Texans having a home playoff game. But it would help, because wouldn't you rather be at home without a home field advantage than having to go to freaking Foxborough?
Oh, without a doubt.
So no, it's not even that I'm going to have some super advantage. It's that it's better than having to do that. That's not an easy place to play.
No, you're right.
And that made me sick last night. Like, the Patriots deserve, no offense to their fans, many of them are good people, you deserve 30 years of miserable football. The fact that it took you 5 minutes to get back, host a playoff game, have an electric atmosphere. Like, dude, you just had a dynasty.
I know.
Like, look at the Bull fans. They're getting what they deserve. They have a dynasty, and they've gone 26 years in which, yeah, they've had some good teams, but they haven't gotten nearly as close to what they were. The freaking Patriots are back.
Yeah.
They could win a Super Bowl this year.
Singing Living on a Prayer together. The arrogance was totally just filled.
Awful, right, man. Let's go to Darren in Tallahassee. Hey, Darren.
Hey, Evan. 2 points. Tiki, you and Spider Lockhart are my favorite Giants.
Oh, I appreciate
it. Evan, you made a mistake. You said irremovable force versus the irresistible
yes,
object.
Yes.
It's an immovable force versus irresistible object.
Here's the problem. I have quoted that Gorilla Monsoon line my entire life, and for whatever reason, since I've used it to refer to the Bills' run game against the Jacksonville run defense, I've screwed it up every time. It's like a new mental block I'm dealing with. Let's go to Mike and Nyack. Hey, Mike.
Hey, what's going on, fellas? One thing for Tiki. Tiki, on the Buffalo, the last drive of the Jacksonville.
Yeah.
Were you surprised that at 4:10 they got the ball at the 14-yard line, Jacksonville, and they threw it right into the end zone? Shouldn't they have killed that clock? They got eight plays to run right there.
Yeah, I did.
And you're gonna,
it surprised
you're
me
gonna
a little
tell
bit.
Me, yeah, you're going to tell me you're going to leave almost 4 minutes on the clock for Buffalo and they're not going to score?
Yeah. It reminded me. It's not the same, but there are certain moments where, like, trying to score aren't as important as running the clock, and they were just on the edge of it. If it would have been 3-something, I would have said absolutely. The score is not important as running this clock down and preserving your lead and being less aggressive. So the challenge is they didn't make the plays when they needed to. And the Buffalo Bills did.
Here's the challenge. When you get the ball back with a minute to go and all you need is a field goal to force overtime.
Yeah.
And you happen to have a kicker with as much range as anyone in the league, you can't throw an interception on your first play.
Right.
That's a fail. Like, I know if I'm a Jaguar fan, there'd be a lot of things I'd be kind of living through. You know, the failed go for it early in the game we talked about earlier when they got the gift from the gods of an extra possession because Ray Davis turned the ball over on a kick return. Yeah, sure, I'd be living through that. But what I'd really be living through is you have the number one overall pick from a few years ago. You've got your franchise quarterback and you're down by 3 with a minute to go and a kicker who can make one from 68. You have got to be set up to, at the bare minimum, force overtime.
Yes.
And you didn't do it. And so that would be the thing that I would take with me this entire offseason. Trevor Lawrence had a wonderful season. But with the chips down and the game on the line with a minute to go, and all I need is 30 to 40 yards, I don't need to go I'd like to go the length of the field. It means I win. But at the bare minimum, I could set up a game-tying field goal.
You know,
it took one freaking play.
You know what's interesting about it? It's because I think in Jacksonville, this is a massive overachievement. No one thought they were this good going into the season. They have some talent, obviously, from Hines Allen as a pass rusher, and Travis Etienne had a fantastic season. Who was the Raider that they got? The wide receiver.
Oh, Jacoby Myers?
Jacoby Myers. He changed their offense, by the way.
They didn't even have Travis Hunter get hurt.
I know. Exactly. And you know, Campanile, who was the defensive coordinator, turned a bunch of average collective players into this one of the top defenses in football. So this was a massive overachievement. So we on the outside are looking at them and we're lamenting their missed opportunities. Internally, this is probably like, that's a hell of a start.
It is a hell of a start, but I will remind you of an adage I have for all the teams I root for, and I would apply it to any team in sports. You never know when you're going to get back.
True.
And I have been humbled by that a million times, whether it's the 24 Mets or it's the Kevin Durant Nets or it's the Jets being in back-to-back title games. And I would kindly say that to a Jacksonville Jaguar fan. Like, Trevor Lawrence could tear his ACL week one. And I'm not rooting for that, obviously. I want him to be healthy. I'm not rooting for injuries. I'm just reminding you that sports is unforgiving.
Yeah.
So when you have an opportunity like a home game, in a game that you could have won, that you should have won, you got to take advantage of it. Because if you don't take advantage of it, you don't know when you're going to be back. I said that to Giant fans after you guys got spanked by the Eagles a few years ago. It was a great year, right? What a wonderful year. Who thought if I told you in September we'd be in the second round? All that beautiful stuff. You got spanked and you haven't been close since, mm-hmm. which is why when you get close, you got to take advantage of the opportunity. Speaking of close, how close are the Mets to actually signing Kyle Tucker?
Sean Moraes in the booth, somebody hide the castle. Optics flying, phones ringing, Evan's yelling,
no!
Tiki's laughing, chaos cracking, nobody's in control. It's Cinco de Roncho. Bam! Crunch! Let's go!
Football treats, everyone. It's a Monday lunch hour. Cinco de Luncho is brought to you by Helix Wireless, connecting everything, everywhere. We had arguably the best wild card weekend of all time. I think you can make the case for that. Certainly Saturday felt like the best wild card singular day in a long time. So I'm just going to rank the games in order, the best games of wild card weekend. And of course, we still have one more tonight.
Here we go!
Number five.
We're all tired for Chargers Pats, let's be honest. Now, it still was a 3-point game at halftime, but no scoring. It's dead last, worst game of the weekend.
Yeah, that was the tryptophan game. You know, we ate all the turkey, we had all this great meal, and I am still not in love with the Sunday night playoff game. I kind of know they have to do it, considering the amount of games we have. And then you combine it with the fact that the game sucked, and it never even felt close, despite it being a one-score game, because the Charger offense was so awful, pathetic and so immovable. And then, obviously, there was no drama in the final few minutes, so that's an easy number five.
All right, here we go.
Number four.
I'm putting the 49er-Eagle game here, and I think it's because of the other four games, this was the only time, or the first time before Chargers-Pats, that the team to lead at the two-minute warning hung on and won.
And as
the other three games did that.
As soon as that graphic went on the board, I knew the Eagles weren't coming back.
Yeah, it felt like that, right?
That was the ultimate,
Yes, of course.
Because the graphic came up and said, every game this weekend, the team leading at the two-minute warning is lost. As soon as that happened, I was like, wow, all right.
Now, I do think we might look back at this game a little more importantly historically. I kind of think, and a lot of people don't realize it yet, that might be the beginning of the end for this Eagle team.
Sean, I love you, and I appreciate your hatred for the Eagles, and I appreciate all your attempts to troll Eagle fans last night. Let me just tell you what's going to happen. I'm going to spoil it for you. They're going to get a new OC, just like they did 2 years ago. It'll be a good hire. The Eagles will win the division, and they'll probably be in the Super Bowl next year. It's rinse and repeat with the Eagles.
Yeah.
Until it's not.
But think about 23 and what
and they
happened.
Have such good talent.
They do.
Like Saquon rushed for 100 yards. Devontae Smith was good. A.J. Brown was okay, but the drops were worrisome. Jalen Hurts, he was okay.
You know what else they have? And this is where Sean can't argue. Howie Roseman versus Joe Shane. Drop the mic.
First of all, I'm not even arguing Joe Shane. This could be the Cowboys. This could be the Commanders. My point is the Eagles are going to lose, or are they going to get rid of A.J. Brown, which could be a positive for them. Saquon's another year older. You saw Lane Johnson get hurt. He's getting older. You saw they couldn't even do the tush push as much down the stretch with the interior of their offensive line. And the bill is going to start to become due with some of these tolling contracts.
This sounds like Evan in 2010 talking about the Patriots.
Fine.
Meanwhile, the dynasty had 9 more years left.
It sounds crazy until you realize you were right. Okay. All right, here we go.
Number three.
I'm going Bills-Jags, and I think I'm punishing this game for being 1 o'clock in the afternoon because it was fantastic, but it felt like it took me a little while to get supercharged and invested into this, but it was a wild and wacky fourth quarter with lead changes.
That's my number one game. I'm stunned that you put that at 3.
But think now, okay, now this is where we're going to have the argument of perception. You watched the Saturday night games, the Saturday games not in real time. You just mentioned you had all that other family stuff going on.
Don't use DVR as an excuse.
No, because I do think it's
you're
true.
Right. The Saturday games were outstanding.
So let's get to that.
Number two.
Rams-Panthers. And the reason I'm bumping this ahead of Bills-Jags is this was a 10.5-point underdog where that team who was dogs was on the verge of a major upset and had the lead under 2 minutes. Now, did I think the Rams were winning at the end? Of course I did. But that comeback, starting with McVay's decision on 4th-and-3 to go for it and not get it, that was insanity. Like, we were on the verge of one of the big NFL postseason upsets of all time until we weren't, which is why I put it ahead of that game.
Okay, keep going.
All right, and last but not least.
Number one.
It's Packers-Bears. The comeback was epic. And anytime the comeback is that sweet, it's got to go up there. It's a rivalry game. I know I say I want domes. It's in Chicago. It's a Saturday night. Fans going nuts. Like, that was as an emotional great playoff game as I've seen in a long time. How could I not make it the best of the weekend?
So, this is the debate of what's best. If, like, I'm talking to a wrestling fan. Is the better WrestleMania the one that had the best main event or the best card? Like, the entire show. The entire show of Jacksonville-Buffalo was the best game of the weekend because it was never a two-score game. The biggest deficit of the game, if I'm not mistaken, was always 4 points. So it was always not only a one-possession game, Teague.
Yeah.
It was always close. And so, unfortunately, what happened in the Chicago-Green Bay game, as great of a game as it was, and yes, it wins for best ending, 1,000%. There were people who probably shut the game off.
See, I don't get that. When the Packers,
not me, but I'm sure people did.
When the Packers missed that field goal to end the half, at least everybody I was with, you just sense it. The Bears are winning this game,
yeah,
aren't they?
No,
and that's the feel it had at halftime.
Yeah, the Bears just, because they were this way all season long. Like, if you don't know the Bears, you're like, yeah, well, the game's over. But if you watch the Bears
cardiac
all year.
Cardiac Bears all year.
All season long. Yeah. They just found, even the Giants game was the same thing. Like, they found ways to come back and win football games.
But,
and so you knew it wasn't over, even if it felt like they have no chance to come back against the Green Bay Packers. A team that knows them, just beat them, whatever it was, week 16, I think that game was, of the regular season, which led to the handshake thing that happened after this one where it was so quick because
he didn't want to get patted on the back
because LaFleur did the same thing to him
in
the week 16 week. I love the drama between these coaches, but like, I didn't think the Bears game was over. In fact, I knew that they would some way mount this thing closer.
I didn't think it was over, but in both the Ram Panther game and the Chicago Green Bay game, there was a point in which it felt like this could turn into a blowout. When the Rams went up 14-0 early, I thought it was going to be a blowout. I was convinced, all right, this is over.
Right.
Now, did they both turn into wildly entertaining games? Absolutely. I'm not putting them down. But I thought pound per pound, if you're judging the entire 3 hours, Jacksonville-Buffalo was the winner. And it also gave you a great ending. It's not like the ending sucked. It gave you the debate that we're still having today on the show about, do you kneel? Do you go for it? Do you score the touchdown? Like, I honestly think, and again, it's a great weekend. I mean, we're picking between beautiful things. I would say Buffalo, Jacksonville's number one. I'd put Chicago, Green Bay, two.
Yeah.
I don't want to penalize it
No.
for the first half not being entirely close or the first three quarters not being close. But
Evan, honestly,
for the full 3 hours, man, it's Jacksonville, Buffalo, bro.
If you put the same plays, same score, same everything, but you put them in Bills and Packers uniforms at night at Soldier Field, I'm probably with you. I think that Jacksonville's getting punished because it's Jacksonville at 1 o'clock and it's not a rivalry game.
And the other thing, just to defend myself on being on DVR, the thing about DVR, because I heard Craig giving Big Mac a tough time for this, and I actually agree with Craig, because Big Mac went to sleep and didn't watch the national championship semifinal game, the classic between the U and Ole Miss, which I don't know how he fell asleep during that game.
Yeah,
he fell asleep. He's got to wake up no time early.
I know.
Did he fall asleep or just didn't watch it?
Maybe it was a combo. When you watch something the next day, I agree with you. Like, it loses something. I was watching something on delay. Like, at 11 o'clock at night or midnight is still fresh. To me, it feels like it's happening. So I never lose anything just because I'm a few hours late. If it's the next day and I already know the result, I completely agree with you. I think you lose something. And sometimes I do that. I prefer not to. But when it's a few hours late and it's still the night of, I don't lose an ounce of it.
You say that, Evan, but you do one of two things when you watch sports these days. Either you're watching a game with somebody, or if you're watching by yourself, be honest, every commercial break, maybe you check in the online, scroll social media, like, everything was a buzz, no matter where you were. You lost all of that by watching that game on delay and being distracted from the world.
Disagree.
Okay.
But we're learning. Sean and I are learning. We disagree, and now we're going
to
move on.
Yeah, because the audience doesn't need to hear us bicker. We got a half an hour less on the show. Let's keep moving. Speaking of which, Evan, how about this? The Fan Focus is sponsored by Chef IQ. Precision cooking, effortless results, chefiq.com. So we were all focused on football over the weekend, but Buster only dropped the spicy meatball as the football craziness was going on. He says the Yankees now operating under the assumption Cody Bellinger will sign elsewhere. This is Bellinger and the Yankees are at an impasse over length of contract. A pivot plan is unclear for the Pinstripes, but according to Olney, they remain engaged on both Bo Bichette and Kyle Tucker, as well as trades.
Yeah.
Is this Boris overplaying?
This is the New York Yankees feeling exactly what the Mets felt a year ago with Pete. Scott Boras is insisting on a contract that is not out there for Cody Bellinger. The Yankees feel they've made a more than fair offer. It's now being reported at about 5 years, 155, which is exactly what Kyle Schwarber and Pete Alonso got.
Right.
Scott Boras is insisting on 7 years. And before we just kill Scott Boras for it, Cody Bellinger may be doing it. Cody Bellinger may be saying, I ain't signing for 5 years. I want 7 years. And so as Boras insists on this contract, the Yankees are saying, dude, if you got it somewhere else, show it to us.
Right.
He doesn't have it anywhere else. In fact, I haven't heard one reported offer for Cody Bellinger outside of the one that's come from the Yankees.
Yeah.
And so I think the Yankees are doing what the Mets did a year ago, in which they leaked out. They are under the impression Pete is leaving. They signed Jesse Winker. We're moving on. And I think that's exactly what's happening. And much like how it ended with Pete, I don't think there's a robust market for Bellinger the way Boras wants it to be. I don't think any team is going to exceed the five-year 155. And so, Yankee fans, calm down. You're going to get him. Yeah. I have no reason to believe this is going to end with a breakup between the Yankees and Cody Bellinger, unless the Yankees want to break up by moving on to somebody else, which I don't think they'll do.
Well, we're not hearing anything about that. The only thing you're hearing from about Cody Bellinger is that other teams, like the Mets, would be interested once there's no bidding war with the Yankees. And that's not happening, because there is no bidding war. The Yankees know what they want to spend, and with no one else bidding, why would they go higher?
Well, the Mets are never going to give Cody Bellinger where the Yankees are at. They're not going to 5 years, 155.
Right, because David Stearns doesn't do that with anybody.
He does it with Juan Soto. There's your exception.
Okay, the one exception.
The one contract the Mets have handed out longer than 3 years in the David Stearns era is Juan Soto.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was going through it last night. You look at Sean Manaea and Luis Severino and any other deal they've made have all been short-term deals, so there's a consistency. The Mets are not involved in Cody Bellinger unless the Yankees decide to move on. But I don't think the Yankees are going to move on. And I think the Yankees are wise, especially if they want the player back, to continue to stare down Scott Boras and say, go get a better offer then.
And one's not coming.
The only way it could happen, I'll paint you a scenario, and this will now pivot to the Kyle Tucker discussion. So right now, the New York Mets are trying to sign Kyle Tucker. So are the LA Dodgers. So are the Toronto Blue Jays. It feels like the Blue Jays are going long-term. The Dodgers and the Mets are both trying to get a shortish-term deal with maybe multiple opt-outs. If the Blue Jays miss on Bellinger, he ends up with the Mets or he ends up with the Dodgers. Mm-hmm. More on Tucker in a second. Then could Toronto say, let's go hard after Bellinger? Absolutely. And I think the Blue Jays could then be a threat. But if I'm the Yankees, I continue to look at Scott Boras and say, your move, bro.
Yeah.
We made a five-year 155. And that's it. Right. We're not going further than that. We're not going to negotiate against ourselves. The thing about Kyle Tucker is this. Met fans, are they trying to sign Kyle Tucker? They are. They're trying to sign him. Do I have confidence that they are going to present the best offer and the best situation over both the Dodgers and the Blue Jays? Absolutely not.
No.
That's where I don't have the confidence they will end up with.
But Kyle Tucker's young enough where instead of demanding, like Cody Bellinger, this massive long-term deal, he should go someplace, like the Dodgers, and this is the same conversation we had about Skubal about 2 weeks, 3 weeks ago, Evan. Go to the Dodgers, crush it, win a championship, and then go back into free agency.
Yeah.
You completely enhance your earning potential.
Not only does it enhance his earning potential because he could have a better year than last year where he fell off in the second half.
Yes.
The free agent market for the next 3 years of position players absolutely reeks.
So it's even more reason.
It's more reason. You will be the king of free agency next year. Like the best, right now, I'm not even joking, the best position player in free agency a year from now is a really solid player named Nico Horner. That's number one. Number two, I don't even know who number two would be. The year after that, Ozzie Albies. Like it is, it's so bereft of star players that it makes sense for Tucker to re-enter free agency. And that's where the Mets are playing. The Mets are going to try to get him on a high AAV short-term contract. But you cannot blame me for having a lack of confidence that they're going to outbid the LA Dodgers or out-situation the LA Dodgers. Because you're right. I mean, it pains me, but you're right. Like the best case for him is to go to that lineup in that situation where you're guaranteed to be in the postseason, have a big October, have a big season, and go right back into free agency. So
I agree.
It sucks. The good news is the Mets are in on Kyle Tucker. They did meet with Kyle Tucker. I can confirm that. But
what does that
I
even
have,
mean? Like, ultimately, what does that even mean?
It means they're being serious about it. Like, yeah. This is not...
Okay, was this in person or is this Zoom? Because I heard some of them are Zoom.
Yeah, that I don't know.
And Zoom is just weird. You're not meeting... You're not knowing somebody over Zoom. You're just not. You don't feel the presence of somebody over Zoom.
And ultimately...
Camera on or off, you think that's fine.
I mean, and, background blurred or what?
And ultimately, you're going to get them based on the offer.
Yeah.
I mean, you could have the greatest Zoom meeting in the world. Like,
true.
You know what I love about the short-term deal?
What do I actually mean to you?
Right.
Show me zeros.
The thing I love about the short-term deal is there have been rumblings all winter that Kyle Tucker doesn't love baseball, that Kyle Tucker may not be a New York guy. Yes. Yeah. I don't know how fair or not that is. I have no idea.
How could you not love baseball? I mean, think about
it. Ask Anthony Rendon.
But if you're a baseball player, but he's different. If you're a baseball player and you're good at it, how could you not love it? Because it's not, you're not getting your head beat in.
I think it's
like
more
you're a football player.
The passion.
Your knees aren't getting jacked up like you're a basketball player. You're not risking, I don't know, mortal injury if you're a hockey player. You know what I mean? Like, how can you not love baseball?
I mean, you only get so many summers in your life. Now 20 of them are spent at the field. Can I get some more pool time?
Stop.
That'd be the sport I'd want to play the least based on that.
Really?
Give me my summer off.
I mean, you could go to the pool in the hotel like every morning.
No, it's not the same.
It's not the same.
If I'm making multi-millions of dollars, I want to use my in-ground pool as much as possible. And if I'm not getting to use it as much in the summer, I'd rather be a football, hockey, or basketball player.
Mm. All right. So you can't withstand 10 years or 12 years of making multiple millions of guaranteed money.
Go get me to be the ninth man in the Portland bench.
So when you're 45 years old, you can sit in your pool for the rest of your life and do absolutely nothing. Because if you make it that long, you've made a lot of money.
When you put it that way. And I guess you don't have to live in the Northeast or the off-season.
No.
I don't know if he dislikes baseball or not. I'm merely saying those are the rumblings. But the beautiful thing about a short-term contract is, let's say it's a disaster.
Right.
It's over.
That's all good. Yeah. See you later, man. Good luck.
Yeah. Like, if you give this guy a 9-year, I'll be honest. And Kyle Tucker's a wonderful player. I remember us arguing at the beginning of the offseason, to me, how much better he was than Cody Bellinger.
Yeah.
And how I didn't understand why the Yankees would be so in on Cody and not
Only
Kyle
because
Tucker.
Cody has proven he's Yankee material.
There's value to that. Yeah. He's proven he could play in New York. He's got more position versatility. I get what he brings. I think Tucker is better. I would be nervous about giving Kyle Tucker an 8-year contract. I would be. Like, if the news broke right now that Kyle Tucker's a Met, I would hope that it's a 4-year contract with, like, an opt-out after year two. So at least I get 2 years out of him, and if he has two big years, great. Go into free agency, see you later. Maybe I've developed enough young players, and I don't care. That's what I would want. But I tell you, I shudder to think about the Met lineup without Kyle Tucker. Because I have to admit, last night I was scrolling down some lineup configurations with Kyle Tucker in it.
Not a good situation.
No, it's not a good situation. But we'll keep an eye on it and see what happens. But officially, I think Yankee fans should take a deep breath on Cody Bellinger. It's all a game. You'll keep him.
Then I will call Scott Boras and say, are we going to make bellies full or is he going to go belly up? If you beleaguer the Bombers anymore, we'll boo you and move on. And I lost the B thing, but we'll just go from there.
Nice. Close. You got close.
Good work, Sean.
Thank you.
Let's go to Joe in Brooklyn. Hey, Joe.
Hey, I've been waiting a while.
Well, you won. You're here. You made it.
Right. Quick thing. I'm a Bills fan. This minute without kneeling just reminded me flashbacks of 13 seconds. Do you agree? Because they just get much time.
No, because when I think of, and you're a Bill fan, so obviously you tell me how dead wrong I am. When I think about the 13 seconds, I don't think about leaving too much time. I think about your freaking defense could not make a stop as great as Mahomes is. So I don't think of the regret of the time more than I do the lack of execution by your defense.
Okay, now I want to get to this. My grandmother passed away like around 10 years ago, and my dad promised my grandmother that if the Bills ever make it to the Super Bowl, he'll listen to it by her grave. Now that would be one heck of a Super Bowl party, but I wonder if my dad made the same thing but as a Jet, but with the Jets. How long do you think before he'll do it, or will I have to listen, or will my children have to listen to my great grandmother by the Super Bowl?
No.
By her grave.
I mean,
the Jets.
Here's the thing about the Jets. Because the Chicago Cubs went as long as they ended up doing without winning a World Series over 100 years, 108 years to be exact, I am now under the impression it is going to take 108 years for the Jets to win a Super Bowl. So that means you're looking at about 2077. So that means, what year is it now? 26?
2026.
So we're looking at about another 52 years.
Ouch.
So that's my answer to your question. I think it's going to take another 52 years for the Jets to win a Super Bowl.
Well, that's very nice.
I'm just being honest. So how old would that make me? I'm 42. 90? So I'd be in my mid-90s if I was still alive. Joe would be dead. So he's gone.
You know, we always ask who's next. You're already talking about people being dead. Out of all seven locals, who's the last to win their next championship?
Well, I just said it's going to take the Jets another 50
plus years. Well, now I'm curious, though. Is the Nets after that?
Yeah, the Brooklyn Nets are not winning a title either. They're actually going to be after the Jets.
Yeah, but can't you get better quicker in basketball?
Well, if you get a superstar, just like in football, if you get a quarterback.
Or you drafted five kids this year. What if one of them turns into a superstar?
Okay, all right. Calm yourself over there. Danny Wolf had a double-double last night. Yay!
There you go.
No, but it's a Jet question, so stop bringing up the Nets. Nobody cares about the Nets. 108 years. So 20, if you want to write this down, the Jets' next championship will be in 2076.
Quick, give me the name of the quarterback.
Carson Maluga.
All right, long-term bet. Put that down.
That's nice.
I gave a name.
That's a good job. Yeah, I was off the floor.
He's Samoan? Played the University of Hawaii?
Yeah, he's Samoan. Well, he's half Samoan. So, his dad is Samoan.
Yes.
And his mom is a ginger. So he's going to be a Samoan ginger.
Nice.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. What year would he have to be born in for this to math out right?
2057.
It's like another 30 years. He hasn't been born yet.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that means the parents likely aren't even born yet.
Yeah, you're right.
Or they're babies now.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. It could be like our kids.
Right.
Our kids eventually having kids.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. That is frightening.